You're listening to Panel Borders, which is the podcast version of Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and on this week's show, continuing Women in Comics Month, I'm talking to artist Karen Rubens, who has been doing well in the UK manga scene over the last couple of years, being included in the Mammoth Book of Best New Manga Volume 2, and a runner-up in last year's Manga Jiman competition. Karen started off in the British small press and is now the comic book artist in residence at the Victoria and Albert Museum in South Kensington, where I met her to talk about her career so far and her hopes for the future. First, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner. Resonance FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
I'm talking to Karen Rubens, the comic book artist in residence at the Victoria and Albert Museum. I suppose if you could talk a little bit about how that came about. Presumably they had a competition and a variety of artists applied for the role.
Well, right, so how I applied for it was they had heard about it through a friend, Jenny Scott, who's involved in all the comic scene, and she posted about it on Facebook. This was last October or something. And there was rather a long application form to fill in, lots of different questions, each one requiring about an A4, side of A4 was worth of text to answer it. So I'm sure this weeded out a few of the less keen people in terms of how much you had to write to start with. As to why they chose me specifically, I'm not really sure. I have been thinking about it. I think possibly part of it is to do with, they asked to see your body of work and the progression that you've done over the years. So because I've done a lot of experimental kind of stuff and my techniques and everything has changed over the years, I think that kind of shows a progression. And also, what they wanted was someone who had experience with doing public events and educational kind of thing. Since I've been working for the last 7 years as a librarian, and I've been doing such things as computer classes and children's events and things like that, and also I've had experience doing like manga and graphic novels workshops for various people, then that kind of gave me that aspect of being willing to and able to run events and workshops and get involved that way. Also, I did have a good tip from a previous artist in residence, which was when applying to make it clear that you're enthusiastic about the V&A and what's here. And one of the things I think that impressed them was that I have come and used the V&A before, like as a student and when I'm researching for things. And I displayed this in a presentation. Shortlisted people had to do a presentation interview, and it was a 20-minute presentation in front of a group of about 12 people. Yeah, and it's not the kind of thing I'm really used to, having not done something like that since probably university, which would be around 8 years ago. So it was a bit worrying. But yeah, I basically put up things and said, this is how I've used the V&A's collections in my work in the past, and I suppose they must have liked the sort of things I said in their huge application form, and that's about it really.
And then and now, how have you used the V&A's collection in your art so far?
So far, during the residency, what I've been doing mainly is kind of looking around, experimenting, and just trying to, I suppose, decide what I'm going to do. I have started writing a comic, which I'm not sure if I'm actually going to create now. I'd quite like to move on and do some other things, which was partly based on looking at all the medieval and Renaissance Christian imagery. There's a lot of it, and it's all like sacrifice and blood and people bleeding for the religion, and it's kind of a little bit creepy in a way that isn't really seen nowadays. People don't really think of it like that. It's all kind of quite abstract, but I like that kind of visceral idea of like using your blood to do magic. So it's the story I've been working on is about people who use their blood to do magic, and it's got images of sacrifice and that kind of thing in it. I'm not sure if I'm going to finish it now or not. I might just finish writing it and then leave it for a little while, because there's some more, there's other things I want to do. One of which is I want to continue doing some things with Japanese mythology. I started with Tsuchi Gumo, which was in the Mammoth Book of Best New Manga 2, which is a story based on a Japanese myth, and also my interpretations of it and my dreams and sorts of things. But in a way, that kind of acted as a prequel to some other stories that already kind of existed in the back of my mind, some of which I wrote with another writer, just as kind of text-based things. So hopefully I can make some of that into a comic. I've got a really big Japanese section here, loads of really good stuff, and apparently, although I haven't seen them yet, they've got lots of Japanese prints hidden away in a secret location, which I'm going to try and infiltrate.
Have you been dropping hints?
I'm going to get in contact with the curator at some point. One of the other things I've been doing whilst I've been here is having a look at all the comics collections that they've got in the National Art Library. Mm. There's a huge collection of American comics hidden in a crypt that was collected by Ian Rakoff. Mm. So I've had a look through them, a little brief look, and there's also some secret filing cabinets that contain huge numbers of graphic novels.
Oh wow.
So I've been going up there and looking through and reading stuff. Mm. But I don't think it's very well known that there is all this stuff out there. There's so many good resources here for comics. They have loads and loads of graphic novels here, and they're collecting new ones as well. So it's not just a kind of an archive of things of the past, it's they're continuing to collect stuff. And I could happily spend all 6 months just in the library reading books and comics, because obviously I like libraries and I like comics. So what more? It's just great fun.
Well, then it does seem to be, to a certain extent, that you're acting as a sort of ambassador for the V&A, sort of promoting the fact that they have access to comics research here, and it's a good place for a comic book artist to come and maybe, you know, further their ambition and their artistic practice.
Yes. And also, it's creating an ambassador for comics as well, because people who come to the V&A are not necessarily the kind of people who would read comics, and having a comics artist in a place like this means that the flow of ideas and things works both ways, so comics people can come to the V&A and say, yes, the V&A is cool and it has lots of stuff for comics artists and writers here, but also that people who come to the V&A or people who are associated with it or who are members can actually find out about comics, and that there are more comics out there than just the one or two things that they hear about in The Observer, or that there are comics at all. Because I have had some people come up and say, you know, what are comics, and, you know,
wow,
aren't they just all about action and violence and things? And yes, you do still get that kind of thing going on, which you'd say, no, they're not.
As an artist yourself, trying to pin down your style, I suppose, it is quite difficult, because you've been through various versions of your style over the years. I mean, if you look at the serialized graphic novel you did with your sister, Dark, it's a lot more calligraphic. There's a lot more sort of penmanship in there, you know, sort of chiaroscuro. And then if you look at your manga stuff, it's cleaner lines, you know, brighter. Is it because your art has evolved over the years as you've been pursuing comics, or you don't want to pin yourself down to one style and each project suggests a different way of drawing it?
Both, I think there's a bit of both in that. I mean, I do like to make sure that the style of the art and the way I tell the story helps to create the atmosphere and helps to tell the story by in a kind of a more subtle way. I'm not necessarily thinking, oh, I must change my style, but what I am thinking is, what kind of story is this? How shall I draw it to make it relevant to the story? So, for example, in doing things like Tsuchigumo, it's all done in pencil art because I wanted to create a kind of a dreamlike quality to it and a kind of a sort of old-fashioned, kind of slightly misty and surreal kind of atmosphere. In Tales by Ghostlight, which is in Lee Kinsushi's manga show, I wanted to get a kind of a horror kind of aspect to doing all the, you know, the cross-hatching and the dark lines, but also give it that kind of a comedy, cartoony feel, because it is essentially it's a comedy horror. In terms of putting down what my style is, it's kind of a hard one, because obviously I am very influenced by manga, but I'm also influenced by other things, such as, you know, American independent comics, you know, things like Hernandez Brothers. I don't know if that comes out of my work at all, but that's one of my sort of things that I really like. And influenced by things like ElfQuest, which is probably my greatest influence on the fact that I'm doing comics now and the way I work. Even to the point where my sister sometimes tells me, oh, you stole that expression out of ElfQuest. And I'm like, how did I do that? Because I'm just growing up with it. I know it so well. And also there has been aspects where I've thought, how can I make my work more appealing to the masses? So for example, when I did The Witch, which was written by Willie Hughes, and I did the artwork for that, I deliberately tried to make the artwork look more commercial because we were trying to submit to Tokyo Pop Rising Stars of Manga, and we knew that they like more upbeat. Generic. I hate to use that word because I've been slammed for using it before. They like things to be more, they like clean lines, they like clean tones, they want it to be, to look and behave a certain way. So there's a certain aspect of changing style to fit the ultimate ends of the story.
Because I suppose when you started out and were selling comics through the small press and at conventions, I wouldn't have necessarily thought of you as a manga artist, but now I think your style is very much associated with manga. I mean, would you see yourself moving back and forth between, you know, comics and manga, if there are two different terms you can use? Because at the moment, the market for what you might call European and American comics and the market for manga seems to be very disparate, which I think is a great shame that there isn't more crossover between the two.
I think that there should be more crossover between the two, and that comics and manga, the styles that are involved, lie on a kind of a spectrum. And I don't think you can specifically say manga and comics are really different from each other. It's like you have a certain generic-y manga style at one end and a generic-y comic style, whatever that might be. I'm not sure if there is one on either side that you can really say. And then everybody's artwork kind of lies on a spectrum. So mine does lie somewhere in between comics and manga. And I would really like to see much more interaction between the two kind of scenes and between the fans and the creators. Something that I've noticed since the manga scene kind of grew up over the last, you know, few years, is that there's very few people that will cross the divide. So you go to a manga event and there'll be one group of people there. You'll go to a comics event and there'll be a totally different group of people. And there should be more of a crossover. There's a few artists that do crossover, very few, but you know, you could probably count them on the fingers of one hand.
Or within the pages of the DFC, perhaps.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, people like John Aggs is part of the manga scene, but his stuff isn't very manga-y. Not the stuff he did for the DFC, anyway. People like Emma Vicelli seems to have crossed over from being very manga to being more part of the comic scene as well. But yeah, I did start out as being part of the comic scene, but back then there wasn't really a manga scene, or if there was, I didn't know about it. And I wasn't really aware of there being one at all. I just kind of liked the aesthetics of manga from having seen anime when I was growing up and read the occasional manga, you know, in the pre-internet days. And then suddenly a few years ago it was like, oh yeah, manga's everywhere and it's all on the internet as well. So it's like, wow, internet, manga. So you could get more influenced by that side of things. So do you, I mean, as an outside person, if I could just ask you a question.
Please do.
Do you see my work as being particularly manga-y?
I think certainly the work that you've had in the manga anthology and in the Witch collection does seem very mangery. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because like you said, there are artists who cross between the two fields. And manga has a lot to offer modern comic book art, because it's an entirely different practice that has only just sort of started to mingle with, you know, sort of Western art. I mean, you know, looking at the stuff that you've got open on your table at the moment with the drawings of fox gods and presumably the other stuff that's been based on the Japanese mythology you're talking about, I mean, that's actually, there's a lot more cross-hatching and traditional type illustration work. So in fact, there I would say that was less like manga, but using manga-esque storytelling, but more sort of Western art. And I think in that respect, it's a very interesting crossover between the two.
Yeah, good point. I think a lot of people tend to take the manga art as a starting point and use Western-style storytelling, whereas for me, it's more the content of manga and the storytelling that's more important than the art style. So, yeah, I think that's a fair comment, definitely.
In this studio, the V&A have lent you for 6 months. Mm. You've got a drawing board, you've got lots of lovely white walls, you've got a nice new Mac setup. Is this an opportunity that you didn't really have before with your art practice, where you're sort of like doing comics in your bedroom, and now this has given you more of an artist studio feel, you know, to your art practice?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been working, I do have a separate study than a bedroom, but I've got, you know, a small desk in my study, and my partner's got a desk in there, and it's like a place of distractions as well, because that's where my computer is, and so if I'm in there, it's very easy to get distracted by things in the house or on the internet. I'm quite a procrastinatory type of person, and so if I'm drawing or something and I think, oh, there's something on the internet I want to look at, I just will go and do it. And so here, it kind of takes away that idea that I'm in my house and everything that's there are things that I should be doing, like, you know, household chores or stuff like that, because I'm in a place where I can concentrate just on making comics, and that's what it's there for. There's no way I would have been able to afford to, you know, rent a studio or anything like that, since I don't actually make any money out of comics, or haven't so far anyway. If anyone wants to give me a job, please let me know. So yeah, it's great to have a space like this, really is, and to have access to, you know, a decent computer, which at home I have a PC. And I've been using PCs, you know, for years and years, and there are certain things about them that kind of irritate me. And using a Mac and just the fluidity of it and how lovely it is to use, it just makes me not ever want to use PCs again. And when I go home, I get really frustrated with it. And it's just really nice to be able to have the opportunity and access to all these things. And of course, I get all my materials for free, so I can buy lots of pens and stationery and things, which is, you know, one of the great joys in life, is to be able to go and buy lots of pens and paper and things like that, and then sniff them, and yeah.
I mean, this does seem to be an interesting time to be a comic book creator in the UK. It's a great shame that the DFC folded, but at the same time, there are things like the Observer competition, there's the V&A residency. Howard Hardiman has some sort of sponsorship with the Natural History Museum with his work. So it does seem to be that there are mechanisms in place to encourage young British artists. I mean, there are courses at Roehampton, at North Wales School of Art and Design. Do you feel that there's hope, in a way, for the British comics industry that hasn't been around for a while?
I feel that there's a lot of hope from the artistic side of things. Like, as you say, there's more sequential art courses, there's more awareness of comics. But in terms of an actual industry, I don't know that there is particularly a good industry at the moment, because while there's more interest, that's a good starting point to build an industry on. But you're talking about things like the DFC going down this year, things like Tokyo Pop pulling out of Europe, basically, although they do have like a small presence. All the editors have gone. And anything that kind of looked like it might be helping the industry a couple of years ago is now kind of, no one wants to take any risks anymore, and no one wants to kind of encourage art financially in terms of a commercial way. It's all more like there's a great growing scene of people doing self-published stuff and indie stuff. There's more indie kind of comics groups out there than ever before. there's a lot more women coming into comics, especially through manga. But is there actually an industry? That's not really one I can answer. I think that it would be nice if some people would start taking comics seriously as a business and just getting some of these people that are producing really good work out there in a commercial way. But is it happening? It doesn't really seem to be at the moment.
Like you said, manga has probably encouraged a lot more women into the industry than ever before. Was that something you noticed as you started making comics? Because I think until about 10 years ago, comics in the UK seemed to be very much a boys' own club. And even the manga and anime that they imported into Britain in the early 90s was all the sort of violent stuff on the back of Akira and Fist of the North Star. And only recently has there been manga created by women for women, at least available in the UK.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first started out, there was me and my sister Anna. There was Selena Lott, and there was a complete absence of other women. There may be like two or three other women that were actually around at comics conventions. And I suppose it kind of helped in a way, because people saw us as a bit of a novelty, and they were like, "Ooh, look, some girls making comics. That's really exciting, isn't it?" And, you know, they'd come over and talk to us, because it was an unusual thing to see. But now there are a lot more women making comics, and more women than men, or females and males even, because a lot of them are kind of underage, are manga readers. It's something like 55% of manga readers are female. And I think with the expanding kind of profile of comics which aren't traditional superheroes and things like that over the last 10 or 15 years, it has got more women involved in reading comics, which is great. Although I personally do like superheroes. That's just me. I like the non-girly things. And I think that you were talking about how anime was all quite violent and mostly sci-fi and things like that. But then there were things like Sailor Moon, which was around ages, years and years ago, and things like Ranma and things like that that girls really like. I think some of it has been around for a long time. Not much, because it was driven by certain kind of genre was popular, a genre of anime. Yeah, exactly. But nowadays you can get a lot more kind of girl-friendly manga and comics. Although personally I'm not really into making distinctions between what kind of things girls should like and what kind of things boys should like. I think that's a bit of a kind of a weird and artificial way of looking at things. I've always enjoyed science fiction and things with violence in, and so I have a lot of girls, but this is just giving, you know, more stuff for women to be interested in, which is great.
And as you've developed as an artist, what would you say your dream project would be a few years down the line?
Ooh. That's interesting. I'm not sure, it kind of changes. One of the things I would really like to do was something that I almost had the opportunity of doing, which was to do an adaptation of Across the Nightingale Floor, which is a teenage novel, and it's set in a kind of feudal Japan type place. And I read the books and I really, really liked them, and I was like, this would make such a great graphic novel. And I went on the internet to a forum, and I posted a review of one of the books and said, I really like this book because of this. And she, Leanne Hearn, author, emailed me and said, "Oh, thank you for posting your review. I think it's really perceptive." And we corresponded, and she said, "Oh, you know, would you like to do some character designs for, you know, possibly doing a graphic novel?" And this was like, oh my God, this is my dream project. This really is my dream project. And I did some sample pages for her and the Australian publishers, but nothing really happened out of that since then. However, I would still really, really love to do that project, and that would be one of my kind of dream projects. But, you know, I guess you can't have everything you want out of life.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, maybe people will pick it up. So I think the problem was they needed more publishers, the European publishers and things, to become interested in the project, and there just wasn't that much interest in it. And when there was interest, they kind of were more interested in using their own artists, but I don't know what's happened to that project at the moment. I would still really like to do it, definitely.
I mean, do you particularly enjoy illustrating other people's words, because you've worked with your sister, you've worked with Willie Hughes, you'd like to adapt this teen novel. Do you prefer just concentrating on the art and not have to think about the script as well?
In a way, I do like writing, and I do like coming up with stories myself, but the aspect of it I find difficult is trying to do all of these things yourself without having anyone else's input. And I quite like the idea that there's someone else there who can work as a team with and talk to and discuss ideas and stuff. Otherwise, I get all bogged down and thinking, oh no, my stuff is really rubbish. And if I'm just doing some, if I'm illustrating someone else's story, then I know it's not rubbish, and like I can be more confident in what I do. If I'm doing it on my own, I kind of start getting all that kind of angst about, is this actually any good? And wanting people to come and edit me and things like that. So, yeah, I think in a way it is kind of easier to work in a team, but it's also more rewarding to do it yourself, because then you feel like, yes, this is a story I wanted to tell, and now I've told it. So I would like to do some more solo projects and things, which obviously I'll be doing here.
Yes.
But yeah, I like working with other writers and things as well.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to visit Karen at the Victoria and Albert Museum, her studio is open to visitors this month from 1 to 4pm on Friday the 11th of September, Friday the 18th of September, Saturday the 19th of September and Sunday the 20th. There'll be more open studios during the London Design Festival between the 19th and 25th, and her studio is located in the V&A Sackler Centre, the nearest entrance to which is in the tunnel that runs underneath Exhibition Road from South Kensington Tube, running north. And you can find more info at www.kazmantra.wordpress.com. The start of autumn has brought along a variety of comics events that listeners in London might like to check out. At the Hunterian Museum in Lincoln's Inn Fields, the exhibition Sci-Fi Surgery Medical Robots has just opened and shows a snapshot of the fiction and reality of the surgical robot. Starting off with 1920s popular fiction and referring to comics such as manga by Osamu Tezuka and 2000 AD, as well as science fiction from Carol Capek's RUR to Isaac Asimov, not to mention Hollywood movies, it goes on to present the real-life medical robots that have developed from this long chain of speculative fiction. The exhibition is open to the public from today until the 23rd of December. Admission is free, and you can also see the remarkable collection of specimens which have been used to educate English surgeons since the 18th century. In October, the museum will be holding a manga workshop and screenings of classic anime introduced by Helen McCarthy. More info at www.rcseng.ac.uk/museums. Over the next 10 days, there are a couple of notable signings by classic comic book creator Pat Mills in London. On the 12th, he, alongside artists Clint Langley and Lee Gallagher, are doing a 2000 AD signing at Orbital, just off Charing Cross Road on the 12th, which coincides with the graphic novel releases of his strips Defoe, ABC Warriors and Flesh. And then on the 19th of September, he'll be signing the English translation of his French graphic novel Requiem Vampire Night at Forbidden Planet on Shaftesbury Avenue. More info about all the above on our blog at www.panelborders.wordpress.com, where you can also download a podcast of today's show. On next week's show, guest interviewer Tom Humberston, a graphic novelist in his own right, will be talking to artist Pierre Guerra about drawing 60 issues of the post-apocalyptic comic book Why the Last Man, which is currently in pre-production as a Hollywood movie. And that's at the same time next week. Thanks for listening.